Hi, welcome to Juicing the People versus O.J. Simpson, the show that juices the O.J. Simpson saga. I'm Adam Papagan.
And I'm your host, J.J. Stratford. Every week we discuss the latest O.J. Simpson media coverage and fact check it against our memories as Los Angeles natives who grew up in the middle of the trial of the century.
The ultimate media circus, it's been called. Well, we're back. This is season two of this show. You know,
can't believe it. We've been renewed.
I feel renewed having the time away, and then we're back. It's good to see you again.
Good to see you too.
What's been going on the past couple weeks? Non-OJ stuff.
Non-OJ stuff? Well, I was flying around the United States a little bit in May doing different video events. And I'm happy to be back in Los Angeles and juicing once again.
When you're doing these video events, do people know that you're into OJ? Do people ask you about it?
It did come up recently, actually. I was doing a bid for a music video, and the band's manager called me, and he said the first thing he wanted to talk about was juicing.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. Sometimes when I'm doing stand-up, I have a show, they'll do like my intro, and they'll say that I have the show about OJ Simpson. And it kind of sets the expectations too high. People think they're going to hear about OJ.
They think you're going to tell OJ.
Yeah,
jokes.
So I tell the MCs, like, don't, you can mention the other shows, but don't. It's just, it's
too specific.
Yeah, it's such a frenzy that happens. That's cool. Yeah, I've been doing well too. Thanks for
asking.
Well,
we went on the tour for the anniversary.
That's right. The anniversary of the murders were this past Sunday, June 12th. And we did a tour, us and our fan Sally, who did that great edible arrangement, and her friend. We were actually at Nicole's condo at 10:30, right when it would have happened 22 years ago.
Yeah, I've only been on your tour twice now, but it's always the condo that gets me the most.
That's like, the best part.
Yeah.
Because you get to get out and walk around.
And this time I was just staring at the tiles. Because even though they've remodeled the most part, there's still like these steps near the sidewalk that are so, look so pretty and terracotta nest now. But I can't help but just think of them being washed away.
Do you think they're the same tiles? They've got to be.
They've got to be. I've been thinking about these tiles all week, actually. And I think that it's Brentwood, it's showbiz. Like, it's history no matter which way you look at it. So I think when they're remodeling it, they're like, you have to keep something to, you know, even though that's sort of morbid, still makes it a tourist site or something.
Yeah, imagine scrubbing the tiles. Eerie, eerie stuff.
Yeah.
And that pink gate we saw, too. That's my favorite thing that I've discovered.
Those tiles, yeah.
Those tiles behind us and that metal pink gate. That's my, because when I'm doing the OJ tour, I'm always just learning new things, discovering new things, adding it to the tour. So finding that gate, a little piece of archaeology that I did.
Oh, yeah, that gate is just in the back now. They've remodeled that. I mean, the whole walkway is different. They've, like, put the door to the side, and then they have this weird plant in the walkway.
But they don't – the gate is on the other – same building but different condo. That's what I think is funny about it. They didn't bother to just redo the whole thing. Just enough of the stuff.
Even in Brentwood, they're pinching pennies.
Well, it's south of Sunset.
Well, I think, I don't know, I think that they kept the tiles because those tiles are iconic. They kept the gate also because that's where, like, the supposed fingerprint that didn't get.
Right. So much stuff about the gate. Also, should mention, too, pat myself on the back, the tour was mentioned on the Bill Simmons podcast. He's a popular sports,
the most popular sports
podcaster. So I've been getting some inquiries lately from men. It's usually women take the tour.
Oh, but now ESPN.
Yeah.
I mean, not to, like, you know, categorize anybody. But
no, it's been mostly bros. So that's cool. Maybe introduce a different demographic to going on sightseeing tours. Not being afraid.
So they want more. They want to Mm-hmm. They've called you for tours.
Yeah.
Oh, because the business kind of dipped.
It did dip.
Second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, whenever I get a celebrity shout out, it's always a bumps up again. So that's cool. But you know, that's not why I do it. I know. Because I want to. You know, people are interested in this, and I just want to help. You know, for my own benefit.
Well, I
learn about myself when I learn about OJ.
Yeah. And I saw an ad for a tour today, and the tickets. This was just around downtown LA, and the tickets were something like $75.
Oh yeah, tours are expensive.
And I thought, that's not Adam's tour.
Well, you know, people don't know how to cut overhead. People don't know how to. I don't know. You know, they don't know what I know as a Los Angeles native growing up in the middle of the
ultimate media circus.
Crime of the century. all right, OJ news. Do we have any OJ news this week?
Well, there was a story last week that Ron Shipp said that OJ might confess soon.
Yeah, which how does he know?
But it was put forth like I think it's his instinct. Ron Shipp's instinct is news.
Well, he's a police officer. They have good instincts. You know, they deal with people all day. So I don't know. That could be. He could. You know, he might just do it for the attention.
I do like it, though, that Ron Shipp felt that OJ should come clean because he heard the story that people were thinking that maybe it was Jason, OJ's son. He said, you can't, once people start blaming your son, you have to admit it.
A lot of people who take the OJ tour are into that theory, that it was Jason, which is weak.
Well, because if you're hardcore, you got to believe a conspiracy theory.
That's true. Speaking of conspiracy theories with all of this,
yeah.
I saw a special on the Reels Network, which I believe is the network that bought the Donald Trump Miss Universe pageant after NBC dumped it because he was racist. But yeah, so quality, yeah.
Meant
quality
to be dumped, yeah.
Endeavor. But they had a special just on Robert Kardashian.
Oh, wow.
Which was a big conspiracy about how he hid the garment bag with the evidence in it. That wasn't the salacious part, that was salacious. That wasn't the interesting part. Okay, check this out. There was a guy during the trial. We should try to get him on the show, actually.
Okay.
He was named Hi-8 Joe, and he was a citizen journalist, and he would go down to the courthouse every day with his Hi-8 camera, and he would just talk to him, but he wouldn't do, like, hard-hitting interview questions. It would just be like, Marsha Clark, what's up, Marsha? Like,
oh, more casual.
Mm-hmm. TMZ style. One of the people he actually interviewed and profiled was a local news reporter named Harvey Levin.
Oh, wow.
So this guy, Hi-8 Joe, and it's literally like TMZ. It's like, just like, what's up? What do you think about that? You know, like just real conversational TMZ style.
Yeah.
And with not even a professional camera, just a Hi-8 camera. So not only did he pioneer the TMZ style of journalism, 12 years later, he was the director of photography for Keeping Up with the Kardashians. So he's had a hand in the two biggest legacies to come off of this case, TMZ and the Kardashians.
Wow.
This one guy really shaped
Hi-8
it.
Joe.
Hi-8 Joe.
Wouldn't it be great if he was still using Hi-8? Just, I gotta live up to my name.
Chloe, over here.
Chloe.
It's Chloe OJ's daughter.
If you're into conspiracy theories, yes.
Prison guard wrote a book called Guarding the Juice about guarding OJ in Nevada. And he said OJ talks to Chloe on the phone regularly.
Oh, wow. That's going on the list of books that we need to read.
Over 160 OJ books. We'll never get to them all.
I don't know. Once you mentioned this idea of building the OJ library, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah. And a video library component, too, with all the specials.
Yeah.
And those are going to be harder to track down, but I think we can do it.
I think we could. We got a good start.
Yes. Well, let's, I don't even know what to say to tell you guys the treat that we have tonight. When we started doing the show, it was originally going to be a more limited show, but we said, you know, we should get a guest. We ran over possible guests. And JJ, you said the right guest will find us. They'll come to us.
And you looked at me like I was crazy.
I said, I don't know. I don't know who's going to work their way to us. How is the universe going to...
No, you're more like, how's Cato Kaelin going to find us?
Well, he does follow me on Twitter.
Yeah.
So
so I was right.
You were doubly right. But point is, do we have a guest tonight?
We do.
Our first guest ever on this show. She is a player in this case, a witness. Actually, there's a little part about her on the OJ tour. Just a little backstory. When our guest, Jill Shively, she commented on our Facebook page. Check us out on Facebook, by the way, Juicing the People versus OJ Simpson. And I saw the name. I recognized it immediately. We need to get this story. We need to juice Jill Shively's story.
Yeah.
So who is Jill Shively? Jill, if you're waiting, we are ready for you now. But just to introduce her, this is OJ A to Z, one of our favorite OJ books. And let's see what they have to say about her. And, you know, it might not be correct, but Jill is here to set the record straight.
Right.
probably should have marked the...
It's right here.
Okay. Shively, Jill. A sales representative and West Los Angeles housewife, Miss Shively told a grand jury she saw an agitated Simpson tooling along the streets near Nicole's home in his Bronco and running a red light about 10:50, the night the murders were committed. After the panel was dissolved, she provided similar testimony at the preliminary hearing. Prosecutors dropped the 32-year-old Santa Monica woman from their witness list long before the trial began, however. Her credibility was called into serious question after authorities learned that about 18 months earlier she tried to swindle Brian Patrick Clark. She continued to deny all the charges, but prosecutors were also disenchanted with their former grand jury witness because they had learned she accepted a total of $7,600 from a supermarket tabloid and television's hard copy for her story about citing the defendant. During her appearance on television, she waived her grand jury subpoena in front of the camera. See hard copy and the star. And also see our guest tonight.
Yeah, she
please
can
welcome
the
very lovely Jill Shively. Hey,
you
Jill.
Can sit in the middle. Hi,
yeah.
Jill.
Hi. Come on over here.
Okay.
So I apologize if there was some misinformation in that intro.
Oh yeah, that was definitely misinfo.
It's slander. But it's become part of the
history,
the lore.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even call it history. Is there somewhere between history and fiction?
Right.
Right. Somewhere.
There's a lot of stuff made up.
Yeah. It's part of the legend.
Yeah. And I think a lot of slandering was done on behalf of the defense team. The whole thing with the script, that's not true. I can't go too much into it because me and Brian Patrick Clark got into a lawsuit with each other and sued each other over the whole slander thing. So that's not true. And if you look at it, Brian Patrick Clark was a friend of OJ's, and it's in one of the books they have, where they have a picture of them together playing softball.
Mm.
And he did not want OJ charged.
It seems like facts, though, are not a big consideration in this case.
It's like whatever people think, because it's on the internet, that it's true. You can put anything on there, and it's like... I saw Jill Shively kill Nicole and Ron, and people will believe it, so...
Oh, I heard this, yeah. Yeah. Just so much...
So
just really lends itself to hearsay. And to,
right.
All right. Well, let's go back then to set the record straight.
Okay.
Where were you in your life in 1994 before this happened?
Working, going to school, had my daughter. She was like 5, something like that at the time. And just living my life. I have a normal life. My mom, my brother, family. It was normal.
Did you live in Brentwood?
I lived in Santa Monica.
Okay, yeah. So,
right down the street from near San Vicente.
Okay, yeah. So just a West LA life.
Right.
Mid-90s West LA
right.
life.
Right. Safe little pocket, never a problem. It was a safe, kind of quaint existence, you know, and by the beach, not too far, and birthday parties. It was a simple thing, and then that all happened.
Did you ever have any interactions with OJ or Nicole? Would you ever see them around Brentwood or anything? Were you aware of them?
Right, I was. Nicole, I kind of had bumped into different times in Brentwood at restaurants and then down San Vicente. OJ, we'd seen a lot too in the neighborhood. He was always around. And he liked the attention. So, and I knew him and liked him from his acting. He was handsome. He was this, you know, the football star. So everyone kind of idolized him. He had a good presence about him. He was nice to people. So we didn't know all this about him, anything other
of course,
than that,
yeah.
Right? You know, so
I don't even think he maybe even knew that about himself until all this happened.
Yeah, I think it brought everything to light. My brothers grew up watching him football, and he was the celeb. He was a
star.
Did
you like the Naked Gun?
I did yeah. Like the Naked Gun, 33 and a third or something.
Uh-huh.
Actually, we had just seen that before this whole thing happened, and that's how I was able to recognize his voice.
Oh, so you recognize his voice. Well, let's talk about right. then.
Okay, so the night that you saw him.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I wasn't going to what they say I was going to.
Oh, yeah,
to.
The FX show, okay. They get it wrong.
They get it.
That's the first fact we pointed out.
They call me the Frogo lady, so I was going to get frozen yogurt, which was not true. That was the first thing.
Well, in FX, then, they said soup plantation.
Then soup plantation.
They didn't even have soup plantation in Brentwood in 1994.
It wasn't even there. And I was Westward Ho. First, people said, was it Whole Foods? And I go, no, it's Westward Ho. Remember, you remember that little market, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Westward Ho was a chain of supermarkets. Yeah.
Right.
We went to the one in Westwood. This
is
where it's now a Whole Foods.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it was here, right? That's the one on San Vicente.
Right. It was a neat little place. they have a great salad bar. So I was trying to eat healthy. I had been sick. I was trying to get there before it closed. The store actually closed at 11,
mm-hmm.
but the salad bar was down. So the time I got there, it was not there. It was down. So I was driving up San Vicente East and trying to get there. I was going, I don't know, 35, 40. It was no one out that time. It was dark. And then that's when I, in the series, they say he came in there with his lights were on.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I didn't see him, his lights were off.
Oh.
And that's why we almost collided. He almost hit me. He was taking there's a curve there. He was taking it pretty sharp. And he almost hit me and another guy in a gray Nissan there on the other side going west. And he kind of went up on this little median right there. And I was looking at him. But I reported him. I thought he was a drunk driver.
Mm-hmm. But did you know it was O.J. Simpson?
Well, at first I did not. I thought it was Marcus Allen at first.
Oh.
Because I knew it was a football player, but I was thinking, okay, Marcus Allen. And then I heard him speak, and I'm like, oh, that's OJ from that movie. And then it was kind of more insulting because I thought, okay, he's being a jerk. You know, he's drunk. He could have hit me. I had a small yellow bug at the time I was driving, and he had the big white Bronco. It would have totaled or my car injured me, and it almost hit the other guy over there too.
So when you almost collided with him, he was yelling at you?
Well, what happened was he swerved, he almost hit me, and then he almost hit another guy on the other lane. But in order to avoid both of us, we threw him out of his lane. He went up on the curb. So he was still trying to go north, and the other guy was going front, and they go back to the front. They were jostling back and forth about three times. And then I heard him yell, move your car. And he looked at me, and it was kind of, because he was angry, or, you know, and I recognized his voice. He said, move your car. It was just like, move your car. You know, he was yelling at the guy. So then he finally went around the guy and then up Bundy North.
Okay, so this is Bundy here, this
right.
picture we have. So this is facing south.
Oh, that's the gas station.
That's
right.
Yeah, right.
Right.
So you were over to...
I was near the school. There was a school.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Brentwood Science Magnet.
Right. And there's a church on the other corner.
Uh-huh.
Why, did you go there or something?
I went to day camp there.
Oh.
And on the day of the car chase, that Friday,
right.
we were all playing outside. I was a kid at the time.
You were?
And at we were normally allowed to stay outside until 6 o'clock.
Right.
It's sunny, it's the summer,
yeah,
whatever.
It's nice.
4:30 about, they're like, sorry kids, we have to come inside, we're in lockdown. Because he was on his way back to Brentwood.
Right.
And so they took all the children inside and they turned on a TV and we watched the car chase.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. You were a kid then.
Mm-hmm. That's why I'm so into this, is because I was living in the Brentwood area at the time.
Okay.
And it was all just happening around me.
Right. And you were, it's coming back.
Impressionable.
Now.
Yeah. I was just swept up in it.
Wow.
So I was at the school around this time.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have some other pictures of the intersection? So OJ was heading this way. So he went up Bundy then.
He went north on Bundy.
See, I always thought he probably went up Bristol because there's no stop signs or lights.
I don't know Bristol. I don't know. But a lot of people thought.
Santa Monica.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so he was actually going up Bundy then, and he could have.
It was Bundy, yeah.
Did he run a light, or did you guys all just not see each other?
I had the green. Mm-hmm. I had the green right away. He had.
You were
he
from
ran,
this
I was
direction.
Going. I was going east, and he had. I had the green, so I was going through the intersection when he came through it, with no. With, there was no lights on.
Here's the intersection from his perspective then.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Up Bundy.
And you used to turn, then you go up north up to Sunset. And then you go around. I don't know which way he went, but soon after that is when.
Screen. Yeah, let's just look at this. This would be then from OJ's perspective.
Right.
And it's kind of, it's a wide intersection.
Yes, it is. There's that median in the middle. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it could be a scramble, you know, even if you weren't in a hurry. It could, you know.
Right.
You could exactly. get, yeah. So it's a kind of a confusing.
Well, and he was moving fast.
Yeah,
too.
Of course. They had a plane to catch.
Yeah. And I just thought, okay, he's drunk, because why would you forget to turn? What reason was important for me is I didn't see him because his lights were off. And also I was thinking, well, who would forget to put their lights on? You would either have to be drunk. So that was my whole premise when I called and turned him in. And then the whole thing just blew up. And because I had gotten the license plate number, I remembered it. I was like, well, it's 3CWZ or 3CW, but 788. And then I said, well, that's his plates.
So you called the next day?
I called like early in the morning. I was around, I think, well, I got home probably around midnight or to my mom's. And so it was early, early. And then they said they would send someone out. And I was like, okay, I just thought it was a drunk driver report.
And this is before the story broke,
yeah.
too, just before.
Because the next morning when it broke, then everybody's at my door.
Oh,
yeah.
So
and they
you
said,
were...
they, the police came out and they said, we'll keep it confidential. But right after them was the media, so it was not confidential at all.
Mm.
And we were being hounded from that moment on.
How do you think the media found out about your story right away?
I had talked to other reporters. They said, well, everybody was releasing it. And the people in the DA's office were releasing it. There was people in the DA's office that didn't want OJ charged at all. And then there was people that did. And I actually had a deputy DA in there who was going to do the domestic violence part of it, Scott Gordon. And his son and my daughter went to preschool together, and he was trying to get that angle. And it was just so many battles every step of the way. To even competition, David Kahn was going to originally try the case, and then Marcia got it. Gil Garcetti was worried that if David Kahn got the case, because he and won, he would be the next DA. It was an election year, and David Kahn had just won the Menendez case, so mm-hmm. he was hot. And so, but then he picked Marcia, and so Marcia and I never got along. So it's like, you know, so it was David Kahn was ready. He said, "Yeah, I need you to testify." He was fine with it. Marcia Clark told me I blew her case because I sold. It said 7,000. I only remember taking 5. I turned down tons yeah. of others, but and then other people got lots more. Everyone was getting paid. And what I didn't know is everyone says, "No, you're a witness. Witnesses get paid for their testimony." So, you know, like, what do you call it, expert witness or whatever. So I had no clue. I'd never been in a witness situation before. And I turned it down, tried to redeem my credibility. And then all these other lies started coming up, and, like, nothing ever checked out. I mean, that book is, there was this book called Joe, there was a book by Joe Bosco, which we sued him on in the book. And there was another deputy DA in there who was a friend of OJ too, Bizanich, Peter Bizanich. And he didn't want OJ charged either. And he went so far in a book and saying I was a felony probationer. That's how the lies got. I've never been arrested, don't have a parking ticket. But in that book, I was a felony probationer. So, and it was all based on people's lies. The defense was constantly trying to discredit us.
And it was immediate and it was constant?
Oh, it's been constant for 22 years now. It was a crazy then, and then every year around the anniversary it gets crazy again.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still like it's still hard. It's been 22 years, and it's still difficult because you feel like it's never going to end. The nightmare is never going to end, and I think it's not ended because OJ never got convicted.
It's like unfinished business.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the Kennedy assassination,
right.
where there's an answer, but there's not, it's still but there is.
Yeah. And like OJ can never be retried, double jeopardy. Mm-hmm. So it's never going to end, never going to be satisfied for the families or anyone involved. But it's going to be a constant thing. And then yeah, I heard you talking about the Martin Sheen documentary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
About them saying Jason did it.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't believe that.
Do you think that there's more that we don't know?
Well, okay. Originally, I thought OJ could have gone there and saw that something happened and got freaked out and left and went home. Because they asked me, well, what do you think? And I said, well, could have. Because I wasn't right on board with him at the beginning, killing Nicole and Ron. I thought, well, he could have saw what happened and freaked out, because the first person they're going to blame would be him. But then later on, his actions kind of rebuffed that. I was like, well, no, he obviously had something to do with it. I don't know if he did it by himself or there was someone there. But after he wrote that book, if I had done it, mm-hmm. then I knew he did it. Because why would you write a book like that?
Yeah. You know?
And it'd tell exactly what you would do. And then he made some comment to someone one time about I should have at the intersection. He said, I should have hit it should have hit me. And I'm like, oh, wow, okay. So, you know, I should have hit him, because if I hit him, there wouldn't have been no question, you know. I was thinking the same thing. I should have hit him. So, yeah, it's still like unfinished business, like you said. And it still affects everyone, even in the smallest way. Like Alan Park was a limo driver. He's had a lot of stuff. And like the guy who saw him dump some bags of clothes or something at the airport.
Mm-hmm. The sky cap or something. Mm-hmm.
I forget his name. We did a Dateline show together. Skip Junis. He saw him dumping things in a trash can there, and they never ever went to look for that. Marsha Clark told me she didn't need any witnesses because she had plenty of circumstantial evidence, and I blew her case.
Yeah. So you had how did you feel when you, after you had this run-in with OJ, and then the next day or two, you know, you see him, the Bronco chase, like how involved were you? Were you like immediately interested in it?
I remember my mom watching it a lot, and I remember catching segments of it. I couldn't believe the media frenzy on everything, and it was just everywhere you went. It was horrifying to me, because people were saying, you know, they were supporting him as OJ, the celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
And then so you had that group supporting him, and it did create, I think it created more of a racial divide, because there were people that accused me of being racist because I said that or whatever I said, and it became a racial issue. And people were rooting for him to get away, and then people were rooting for him to get caught. It was really such a hectic period.
How did you feel, though, about his guilt or innocence when you saw him kind of running from the police?
Oh, at that time?
And considering what you had just seen.
Even at that time, I thought that maybe he had, if he hadn't done it, he knew who did it, and he was afraid of being accused, or he was afraid of what had happened. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't completely convinced it was him or him alone at that time that had done it. But all I ever knew is I saw him there, and I even told Marsha, I said, I don't know what he did prior to that. And she said, what do you think he did? And that's when I told her, then she got upset with me because I was speculating what he did. Well, then why are you asking me?
So you and Marsha Clark didn't get along?
No.
How did the beef start? How did you?
She was just not nice to us. I mean, I'd never been a witness before, but it was like we were almost like the criminal. She would question us and go over our story, and it was as if we had done something wrong. I even got an attorney because I felt like I had to protect myself from her, because she would call at any time and have us come down there.
So you were having to go in all the time and give statements and stuff?
Four or five times, but that was enough, you know.
That's a lot.
Yeah, that was a lot, because different police officers would question us. Tom Lang and Phil Venato, though, were great. They were excellent, and they even told Marsha, you know, we got to put her on, and she doesn't have any criminal record. She doesn't have anything. But what happened was that Deputy DA wrote the book. He says, well, I checked her out. She's a felon. And he's like, she is not. So it became like a big thing. My $5,000 or my $7,000, it was really nothing compared to what other people were taking and doing.
And I, like I said, I even offered to get rid of it. So Marcia and I headed off at the wrong thing because I felt that she was just, it felt really uncomfortable, like, to be there. And not only the media part, but then her demeaning way. You know, I know she's a good prosecutor or whatever, she's doing her job, but it was as if we were the people on trial.
Did you know she was a Scientologist?
No, I had no idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really?
Uh-huh.
She's not doing something. I mean, because they talk about Scientology, you control your reactive mind. Her reactive mind was not controlled.
Maybe she wasn't like that high up yet. Maybe she
was like John Travolta or Tom Cruise.
Yeah, she wasn't there. She was like more, maybe lower on that.
I knew she had two young kids. I know she was stressed. And then the movie, actually, the miniseries kind of shed more light on that. But still, I feel that she didn't do her job. And she didn't make us feel... We were already being harassed. It was a really horrible experience in a lot of ways, but we felt no protection or camaraderie with her. We never felt like we were on the same team with her.
What was the in the height of all this and all the frenzy? What was or was there like a single moment that was like the worst thing that happened? Like, the people digging through your garbage? Or
somebody
threw a pie at you. Like, was there like a really bad moment?
Yes, there's a lot, but the one that stands out in my mind, I was putting my daughter to bed in her bedroom, and I see this camera and this guy, some tabloid show. Uh-huh. He was looking in our window, filming us with his camera, and it was, I'm like, oh my gosh! And so that was really bad. And they would follow us, and me taking my daughter to school, and it was as if we, for 2 years during that period of time, we had no privacy. It was a frenzy, feeding frenzy. But I do know a lot of the reporters now, and I'm friends with a lot of them. And some are really good ones that aren't like hounding you, and they're really ethical and real legit ones. We've been in contact, and actually we've made a lot of good friends, and we've helped each other with their families and stuff. So a lot of good's come from it, but the bad is you get this guy. I don't like him anymore to this day. He's this guy, I think he has a job with Dateline doing something, co-producing. But he was just doing, he was just harassing us every step of the way. My daughter was like, would cry, like, what are these people doing here?
How old was she at the time?
Four. Okay,
oh, that's
94.
Pretty, weird. You're suddenly Surrey Cruz.
Yeah. So people would call her name. And so she was like, why does everybody know my name?
Did it get worse after Hard Copy was the first?
That was the first thing I did.
Uh-huh.
And at that time, for a long time, it was the only thing I did.
Did you think that doing Hard Copy was your intention to let your story be known? Or did you have like a... When you decided to be on it, did you have good intentions for it?
My intention was just that they said, well, we need to get your story out before, the other people do. We want to get it out. But originally, I think what they had said, we won't air it till later. But then they did air it. And they were worried about being sued. So... I know the knife guy was doing something, and other people had done stuff. And everyone made it seem like that was okay. So we did it. But I was thinking, God, I turned down, that was $5,000. But I turned down a lot more. At the time, I lost my job because of the whole OJ case.
Oh.
But I turned down over $100,000. And it was like, and then I was trying to stay credible. Because one thing that made me feel really bad was my sister... was in a domestic violence relationship, and she got killed in August of that same year. So I always felt like my money was blood money, and I felt even more horrible.
Your sister was murdered killed in before this case?
The two months after.
Wow.
Yeah, that was June, and hers was August 3rd or 4th of that same year. So, and I remember going there to see her when she passed away with my mom and my brother. But I felt even worse because I felt like I had taken blood money. And I also had a tremendous guilt, which Jim Array from Inside Edition helped me just recently get over that guilt, because I felt like I had really done something horrible. I didn't do what I was supposed to do by being, whatever, for whatever reason I was supposed to be there, I blew it. I didn't do what I was supposed to do. But then again, it kind of, then they were always telling me, well, you, Marcia, I felt guilty because Marcia, I really believed at that time that I had blown her case. I took it really personal. I like, took it to heart because I'm like, wow. But then someone said, Vincent Bugliosi had called me and said, you know, if they even had her on him on videotape killing, they wouldn't have convicted him. It wasn't your fault. So I've had a lot
of evidence.
Yeah. Well, they had a lot of evidence they didn't use.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of people they didn't use. And, but, you know, I was there around 10:45, 10:50, and Marcia said that fits the timeline, whatever they were building at the time, and I had no idea. At the time when they came to me, I was like, okay, that's good. You know, I had no idea it was going to be this much of a crazy first reality show, you know. Mm-hmm. That's what it was.
Did any of this cause you to become an OJ geek?
What do you mean, like an OJ geek?
Kind of like checking facts and staying, reading books about it.
Oh.
Or did you?
No. The only time I wasn't even going to watch this show recently, and then someone told me, hey, I thought you said that the lights were off when you went to see him. I was like, yeah, why, what happened? They said, well, then the show, they say you went to, they called you the yogurt lady or frogo lady, and then they said that you went to the soup plantation. So then the people are saying, well, what happened? I said, well, if you look on the internet, it has our transcripts. Anybody can look it up. That's what happened. I don't know why they're doing that. No, I like the only books I've ever read is people, I think Vincent Bugliosi, Jerry Spence gave me their book. I have Jeff Toobin's. I haven't even read them, but I have them because they gave them to me. But I haven't read them, and I won't read anything. I feel like it's just, it brings back too many bad memories. Mm-hmm. So, and I try to avoid even going to that, you know, that intersection whenever I have gone, or near her home. A year or so ago, I did a Dateline show. They did it near her home, and it just made me feel really sick to my stomach. So, OJ's a bad. I don't even want to hear orange juice. You know, I don't even want to hear that because it's not a happy period, and it's in some ways it's changed my life for some good, but a lot of it's still like a little thorn in my side.
You probably have some post-traumatic stress disorder from all of this.
I did. Yeah. I had a lot of it. And I even 5 years ago developed cancer, and I'm okay now. But I felt really horrible about my blood money, which is what I call it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't help. But then I had to go through a lot of counseling. A lot of people stepped in to help me. Like, no, you know, you couldn't have done anything. It wouldn't have mattered because Marcia had turned off the jury and they didn't like her. And they let it know, be known. So I had to come to some peace with myself. Okay, I made a mistake. And I apologized to the Goldmans and the Browns. And they accepted it. They didn't blame me. I blamed me more than they did. Mm-hmm. So I think anyone went through it. It's like going through a war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's angering that he's in jail for something that he should be in jail for the murder.
Mm-hmm.
He just had a dream team and they did a better job.
Did you have any dealings with the Dream Team?
Oh, yeah, they came. They would try to talk to us. They would send investigators out to our homes. They were always, you know, there was and now my attorney, and everybody said, don't talk to them. We said, don't talk to them. Because what they do is they want to try to get something from you on tape or testimony and then change your story. They want to catch you in something and then change it.
Probably nicer to you than Marcia Blair.
They actually were in some ways. You would think.
They're smooth. Yeah.
Well, yeah, they were nicer. They even, you know, they offered money and sent us away on vacation. And like, no, I was like, no, I'm not doing that anymore. I've already done that. So it went on for a long time, though. He was in jail for what, 18 months or something like that. So, and the trial, and it just never ended. And I became close with this guy in the courtroom, Dominic Dunn.
Her favorite.
Oh, really? That's my favorite, too. He was such a sweetheart. I mean, he kind of took me and my daughter under his wing and always was, like, trying to make sure we were okay. And he was a sweet man. And he was, like, always supporting me. But one thing, though, after the whole thing and the whole grand jury, and after that, I kind of went into hiding. And I said, well, if they need me, they know how to reach me. My attorney was friends with Phil Van Adder. They played football together in high school. So it was kind of a tight community. And they knew where to reach me if they needed me. So
Something you told me right before we went on the show, which I thought was kind of interesting. You know personally a lot of the people in OJ A to Z. You guys have kind of become friends through all of this.
I think we tried to bond together more for protection, or just, you know, it's same, like going through the same war. We became, you know, we went through the boot camp together, I guess, or the war zone. So we talk not as much as we used to in the beginning. Everyone, maybe in some ways, we try to distance ourselves from each other because then we remind each other of that period of time. Mm-hmm. You know, so, but we talk through via text or Facebook, to keep in touch, see how we are. But, I know, like, a lot of people that worked at the Mezzaluna restaurant, they don't talk to anybody anymore. And, so everyone's kind of they try to fade away. And then actually, if you were to, like, they said, well, yeah, but if I meet with them, then they remind me of that period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like that.
Did you ever eat at Mezzaluna?
Once way before that. And it was a nice restaurant. But there were other restaurants I would go to.
Gaucho Grill.
Chin Chin's one of my
favorites.
Oh,
yeah, Chin Chin.
I love Chin Chin, and I love the Cheesecake Factory. Oh, now it's closed. That was one of my favorites. I'm not sure if it was there at that time, though. And then they had Hamburger Hamlet.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
Which closed because somebody was, like, stealing tips or not.
Really?
They were writing in, like, on the tip amount. There was somebody there, like, writing more amounts, and because of bad publicity, they had to close.
Oh, that's terrible, because I love that place.
Yeah, I did, too.
I actually saw Nicole there a couple times, she with her friends, and she was always nice. I always thought Denise and Nicole looked a lot like this. One just had blonde hair, one had dark hair. Mm-hmm. They're almost like twins, but the one had darker hair. So
you became friends with Tanya Brown.
She's really a sweetheart. I became friends with her from Jim Murray from Inside Edition, and he kind of hooked us up. And because he was trying to help heal, he's like a spiritual guy. He's like the guy who tries to help people. He knows everyone's been traumatized, and he helped me get through a lot of my trauma, and he helped her too because she went through a long period of depression, of course. And
she was younger than the two sisters.
Yeah, she was. I think the youngest. I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. So you know, there was a lot of bad that happened, but there were a lot of good people that came and, you know, and stepped forward and helped us out. Like one of the people that, Vincent Bugliosi, recently died of cancer. He really helped me a lot. I would talk to him a lot, and he was a good guy.
It's interesting to me that it's the tabloid people that are, you know, they put out these crazy news stories, but they're the people that are actually connecting the human beings and, like, making people, introducing people.
Like, yeah. Well, the Inquirer, right?
We have a bunch of them here.
You do?
Yeah.
I think there's
these bring back some memories.
Oh, yeah.
The Star here. Here's an Inquirer.
Yeah.
OJ stalked Ron Goldman for weeks.
Wow.
Picture of the family.
One of my friends was Tom Laughlin, who used to do the Billy Jack shows.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he lived near the OJ, and he said that Jason would come to his house many times to run away from OJ because OJ had just beaten him up. So they did have a very bad relationship.
They knew each other before
the whole thing happened.
The National Enquirer reporter and OJ already had.
Oh, yeah.
Their sons were friends? Is that what
you're saying? Well, no. Tom Laughlin was the guy, the adult in the home there near OJ.
Uh-huh.
And he was a teacher and a counselor. So Jason, when OJ would beat him up, he would run to Tom Laughlin's house. And Tom Laughlin would go there and say, you can't beat your kids. You got to stop that. And so if anything, Jason has a lot of anger towards OJ. More than I would think. I don't know why he would help him out. So, but that documentary coming out, they wanted me to talk on there about my thing, and I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. And I respect Martin Sheen, but I think they're misguided.
Mm-hmm.
I love Martin Sheen.
So they got in touch with you.
Yeah, and I just, like, I'm not, I don't want to participate in that.
Did you participate in the new ESPN?
No, 34? I did not. I turned out a lot. The only thing I've done is CNN, because my friend was there.
but I've turned down a lot with related to this whole thing and this year and the Dateline, and it just brings back too many bad memories. And I don't really feel like I have a lot to say. I only saw him that one that one thing, and then. But the only thing I liked, what made me mad, was the series where they got everything wrong, and then people started questioning, like, "Wait a minute, you said that." I'm like, "Yes, I did," and I still say that.
Jill, you told me you were going to Westward Ho. The show says you're going to Soup
Plantation. The show is, you know, whatever they say has to be correct, because why would they say that? I said, well, the producers didn't do their fact checking. I don't know why I even questioned Scott Alexander, and he never got back to me. I said, why did you change? What actually happened? And you kind of take the, to me, the most important thing was his lights were off, and that's why I didn't see him. And they made up where I went. I don't know why. I guess it's not a big deal, but in my transcripts.
They just wanted people to know that it was the 90s. We asked them. We went to like a Q&A with the writers.
Oh, you did?
We asked them specifically about Soup Plantation.
Yeah, what'd they say?
They wanted to put something clever in the script so people knew it was the 90s. But Angelinos would know that Westward Ho is like the ultimate Easter 90s Easter egg.
And it wasn't, I think Soup Plantation was even there in like 2000 or something. I don't remember when. Yeah. But oh, so that's what he said. But the lights, everyone kept calling me, "Hey, Jill, I thought the lights were off. You know that they made a mistake?" I was like, "Yeah, they made a mistake." So.
What'd you think of the Marcia Clark in the effect show?
Well, I thought it showed her more in a sympathetic light than what I'd seen, and I realized she was under stress. But then why did she take the case if she's under so much stress? Why did he give her the case? And actually, Gil Garcetti even commented later, "I didn't want her to have the case." So then, okay, well, you had control. Why didn't you give it to someone else? To me, I felt like he was trying to put the blame on Marcia, but he dropped the ball too as the DA. He should have given it to David Kahn or anyone else. And, you know, she was having marital problems, you know, all kinds of stuff. So even my friend who's a deputy DA, he says, "I don't know why." And then he was preparing the domestic violence part of the case. And she says, "No, I don't need it." He's like, "Okay."
So even for you, as in the middle of this, there's still unanswered questions. There's still things you don't understand.
I don't understand. I'm not an attorney or anything, but I think if I were an attorney, I would put people on the stand and let the jury decide. And I would not just assume. And then later on in the series, she said something about, "Oh, I realized it was not a slam dunk. She couldn't back up." I would not throw away things or people. It's such an important case, and I guess she thought it was just slam dunk, which is why she kept saying, "This is a slam dunk. It's a slam dunk." It wasn't a slam dunk,
right?
You know, and the Dream Team did a remarkable job. If I committed murder, I would hire them too. You know, Johnny Cochran's great.
So if you can pay for it.
If you can pay for it, right?
Not even OJ can pay for it.
Not now.
Well, Jill, thank you so much for coming on the show. My last question would just be, you know, this case, as you know, is so much bigger than a murder trial, It just really just was the zeitgeist at the time. It was a tragedy, but is there anything positive that we can take away from this? Or is there any message from your perspective?
I think since we've already been through this crazy period of time in the OJ case and what's happened, one thing I think if you can be aware of anything is that it should have raised people's level of awareness about tabloids, what's really out there. It would make me question media now more. And some people, they did get it. But I know my daughter's 26, so she was young, so now she's like reading things now. And she's saying, "Did this really happen?" I go, "No, that did not happen. That did not happen." So I think the good thing is it will just raise people's level of awareness of what can happen and then be a better witness. Like if I had known that people would become an offering the world and that it really wasn't okay to do that, now they have a law saying you can't take money, you could be arrested. And if, you know, the DA would properly prepare you for all this, like they didn't even know. They just thought it would be a regular murder trial. They didn't know how much everything would have, how it would happen. No one was prepared. So I think if it ever happens again, I'll be prepared, but I hope it doesn't happen again. You know, so, but I don't know. I wish that the race relations weren't so bad still now.
Mm-hmm.
It's still the same thing they're going through. And I don't know if that will ever heal. LA's pretty volatile about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you have any more questions? We're about out of time. A tradition on this show, we like to do, we end with a joke.
Oh, yeah?
We have this awful joke book. It's called the Sick OJ Sick Joke Book.
Okay.
So we're just going to find one here. Hopefully not too poor of taste. All right, well, here's one about the verdict.
Oh,
and
okay.
About, this is kind of, right. And it's a one-liner. So the jurors say that race had nothing to do with the verdict. That's true. It was stupidity and ignorance that was to blame.
That's true. That's really good. That's probably the best statement I've heard.
Well, all right. Jill, well,
thank you
so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. Thank you both. It was fun. Thank you.
And, thank you all for watching and listening, however you pick up the show. And until next time, we're going to be back for the next couple of weeks covering the ESPN show, which I know you haven't seen it yet. It's pretty good. But so you'll hear our opinions on that and hopefully more great guests like Jill. But until next week, everybody, this is Adam Papagan for JJ Stratford and Jill Shively saying, don't squeeze the juice.